Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Hold for Hold Pro Wrestling Podcast. It's me. It's your host, Jaime. I'm back after a week of being gone. I know you missed me, but this is the new schedule, so we're going to have to stick to it. I am technically a day late, but this is going to be like the official day that I can record. I figured that Mondays was kind of dumb because then I'm recording during Raw. So now I'm recording during NXT 2.0, which I don't think is that big of a deal. So this is where we're going to stick to. You should be able to see this episode Tuesday night or Wednesday morning, depending on where you are. But yeah, this was kind of an eventful week. It was post-WrestleMania that I have to talk about. So like the Raw after Mania, the SmackDown after Mania, which, spoiler alert, nothing really happened on the Raw after Mania, but that's okay because the SmackDown after Mania was kind of eventful. And then this Raw that had just passed felt like the Raw after Mania. So I don't know if that's the new WWE schedule of doing things, if they're just giving themselves like a break the first Raw after WrestleMania, but it did feel odd. But not to say that nothing happened, but we did have some developments. We'll get to it. We're going to start off this week with some news. I know you see what this episode's called, and it's a little bit of a different format that I want to try out. So we're going to talk about NXT 2.0 in detail today, but I'm going to save that for the end so that way I can really hone out my thoughts and we can go over everything, because we have pretty big news for NXT 2.0 as their tag champion Nash Carter was released, and those tag team titles were then vacated earlier last week, this week, whatever you want to call it. So they are going to be having a 5-team gauntlet match to decide new champions, and that's happening tonight. The teams announced are Grayson Waller and Sanja, Legado del Fantasma, the Creed Brothers, and Josh Briggs and Brooks Jensen, along with Pretty Deadly. This is a great opportunity for them to like pivot from the news, because it's ugly news, to be honest. And the gauntlet match is a really fun concept that they don't pull out that often, especially on NXT, I feel like. So hopefully the whole first hour is like taken up by this and we have some good wrestling for that. My prediction, this is pre-NXT 2.0, so I'm not cheating, kind of think it's going to be Grayson Waller and Sanja going to pick this up. They seem like the perfect like transitional champs, because Grayson Waller has really elevated his stature, and he's not yet ready for Bron Breakker, especially after what happened to Bron Breakker last week. But yeah, I can definitely see this being like a good little transition phase for him, because I kind of think he's going to be the next NXT 2.0 champ if he doesn't get called up before then. But I don't know. I don't see any call-ups happening anytime soon, especially now that we just had a bunch this past week. So it's going to be interesting. That's my early pick. I know Pretty Deadly just arrived on NXT 2.0, and so they could be the, you know, front runners. But since they kind of already started a feud with the Creed Brothers, it doesn't really seem likely, unless the feud's going to be a way to get the Creed Brothers the tag titles. We'll see. I definitely just have Grayson Waller and Sanja for now. Following that, we're going to talk about WWE announcing a new UK stadium show for September. This is pretty big news for those UK fans, those rabid European fans. They've been clamoring for another UK pay-per-view, and not an NXT TakeOver. They want a main roster pay-per-view, and this is seemingly what it's going to be. It's going to be in Cardiff, which, if you haven't watched NXT TakeOver Cardiff, that's an amazing NXT TakeOver. It's amazing because the crowd, those UK crowds are unlike anything in the world. So I'm very glad to see that they're going back to the UK and they get to bring the whole main roster crew. And you have some great acts on the main roster that are going to get, you know, recognized. Because I feel like the UK crowds, they recognize the smaller guys. They're almost like the Canadian crowds, or what they used to say about the Raw After Mania crowd of, oh, they cheer what you're supposed to boo, we're in bizarro world, which is always terrible. But it is true that, you know, those smarter crowds, they go for different things, and the UK crowd is no different. In fact, they might be the shining example of that, and I'm excited for that. It's going to be in September. Good time. I'd rather that than a Saudi show, that's for sure. So, great news right off the bat. And let's get on to the Raw after Mania. I already kind of prefaced this by not much happened. Initially when I was taking notes for the show, I really felt like Raw felt stale that night. You did have some shiny new things like Veer finally coming on Raw. And he defeated Dominic Mysterio in his debut, which was a good debut. I mean, he's in a feud already. That's as much as you can ask for, especially when they've been vignetting this guy to death. So glad to see Veer coming all over Raw. And then we also get Cody Rhodes speaking, and he spoke about the same things that I mentioned in that interview. Just that the reason he came to WWE is to, you know, get the title his dad never won. So that was pretty big news right off the bat. But yeah, I mean, I guess, you know what, now I'm looking at these notes. Maybe it was in the moment that it felt like nothing happened, but we do have some things. Rhea and Liv Morgan kind of tease breaking up. Lashley and MVP did break up. And this is, for me, the biggest news piece coming out of the Raw after Mania, because I love the Hurt Business. I think they were a missed opportunity, although they did get some great moments with them while they had them. But I especially feel like the Cedric and Shelton Benjamin piece of Hurt Business was a big missed opportunity. But anyways, moving on, Lashley and MVP broke up. Lashley has apparently been given MVP too much I don't need you energy. So MVP decided to break that real quick. He aligned himself with Omos, which I don't think has the potential to live up to this feud, like as a, in the terms of in-ring, and maybe even a character, because Omos is kind of just like a brooding giant, which isn't his fault. It's definitely his directive. But in this, you know, melodramatic, really storytelling heavy feud between MVP and Lashley, he's gonna definitely feel like the third wheel, and we're gonna talk about that, because this past Raw he definitely felt like the third wheel. But yeah, this is very good stuff. I like the breakup. I like the reasoning behind it. MVP always can grab my attention on the mic, so I'm happy to see where this goes. I don't think this is gonna end up in an MVP Lashley match. Even though I wish it would, because I feel like that's the better match there, even with MVP, you know, kind of being in the later stages of his career, I still see that as a better match than Lashley versus Omos, but we'll see. The other kind of big thing that happened, well, that was actually the most disappointing part of Raw, and I think that's why I was so soured on it when I wrote this. Was because Roman came and said nothing. He just said, you have to wait until SmackDown to find out what my next move is. Which, great plug for SmackDown, but you are holding both titles, sir. What I really would have liked here, and this is total fantasy booking, so please indulge with me, I would have loved his entire division, if you want to call it. Everyone who could theoretically challenge for Roman's title, come out and interrupt him one by one by one, not letting Roman even say a word. Roman does his entrance, he goes to grab the mic, immediately interrupted by like Kevin Owens. And then Kevin Owens is interrupted by AJ Styles or Edge, and then list keeps going on and on and on. And it just ends in one of those Attitude Era-esque finishers in the ring, just spamming, everyone hitting their finisher on everyone. You know, and then you're left there with Roman just leaving, maybe even just shrugging like, and then leaving. I think that would have been the better way to build to the SmackDown of him actually talking about his plans, because this was boring. No offense, but it was boring. So yeah, that was the biggest disappointment coming out the Raw after Mania. And there was no debuts. There was Veer. Veer came. But there was no call-ups, I should say. There was nothing of the typical Raw after Mania, which I know the Raw after Mania kind of has diminished the last few years, but it's still such a huge opportunity for WWE to take advantage of that post-WrestleMania audience that they have. And I know this for a fact because my parents are very casual watchers of WWE, but they watch all the pay-per-views for the most part. Not as much anymore because we have pay-per-views every month, and are they really special? That's another argument for another day. But essentially, they watch the big four pay-per-views, and WrestleMania being the biggest of them all. my dad, especially, he'll watch WrestleMania, and then he'll watch the Raw after Mania. And every year for like the last 5 years, he's like, I don't know why I watched Raw. Then nothing happens. They just recap so much. And he's as casual as you can be with, you know, some caveats, but he's a very casual fan. And I think they're really missing the opportunity to grasp these viewers in for another season, or at least until Backlash. So that's kind of my biggest gripe, I guess, with the Raw after Mania, is it is definitely losing its shine, and it's still such a big opportunity. Because WrestleMania did great numbers. I mean, I just saw today that WrestleMania was trending better on social media than the Super Bowl this year. Which, again, that might not correlate because TV is watched by much older people, and obviously social media is interactive with more young people. So those numbers might not correlate, but the buzz might be there, you know? But yeah, and then following Raw, Cody Rhodes had a dark match against Kevin Owens, which looked fun. Kevin Owens busted out the Young Bucks' pose, that little muscle pose. I don't know why I did it. You can't see me. But yeah, normally, like I said, normally I don't talk about NXT 2.0, but guess what? The whole episode's going to be about them pretty much, because I said that I wasn't going to talk about them, and I realized that I never really got to air out my thoughts on NXT becoming NXT 2.0 in a format that I like, and that's a little bit easier, I guess, for especially me. I like to go off on tangents. It's a little bit easier for me to just grasp and boom, 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 hit it out there. So we're going to talk about NXT 2.0 from last week, and we're going to talk about just everything that happened with it, the major stuff at least. Because something major did happen. Well, one, slightly, it's a little minor, but they got new world titles, which I actually like. I like the design of that, the iridescence around that NXT logo. I think it fits. I think they should have used that for their actual new logo. Instead of the paint splatters, they could have went with like a gradient iridescence, which would have been cooler and a little more modern. But of course, they're not going to do that. But the big news, thing that really made me mad when I woke up Wednesday morning, checked Twitter, was that Bron Breakker defeated Gunther. He did not defeat Walter. He defeated Gunther. This being a wrestling fan, man, is tough because you do have to love the absurdity of it. But this was absurd to me. Walter would never lose to Bron Breakker. And this is what got me thinking about what NXT 2.0 has done to people like Walter. Not just from a name change perspective, but on an entire character perspective. And in this match itself, it's such a 180 from Braun's actual character in NXT 2.0. His character is that he's a rookie. And he needs to learn to beat people. He fails. Which is fine. This is a good character, to be honest. A person like Bron Breakker, who looks great, who is pretty athletic, right? He has flaws still. And I like that we established his flaws. And that's that he's a kind of not as smart as his opponents. And so it takes him a minute to figure out their plan. And then he's able to, you know, counter it. It happened with Gargano. It happened with Ciampa. It happened with Ziggler. And when I saw that Braun versus Gunther was announced, I was like, well, Gunther might win the title here. That's just the way Braun is. But, of course, that's not what happened. It just makes me mad because Walter is the ring general. He's the smartest man in the ring. I mean, that's his character. That's his foundation. I mean, his foundation might be his chop, but that's, you know, his philosophical foundation is that he's the ring general. He can outsmart you in that ring. He couldn't outsmart Bron Breakker. It really infuriated me. But we can see now with hindsight, now that SmackDown has happened, Gunther got the call up. So this seems like it was just the way to write him off of NXT 2.0, which I don't like. Gunther shouldn't be going out on his back. There's certain people that just should be protected. And then when they show up on main roster, they feel like even more of a threat. And I feel like this is one of those cases. He shouldn't have gone out like that. Because now the last thing that any NXT 2.0 fan sees is Gunther getting, not destroyed, but he did. He lost, you know? And now if those NXT 2.0 fans want to watch SmackDown, they're like, why is this guy showing up on SmackDown when Braun Breaker is beating him, you know? It's just not my thing. They also kind of hinted at an Imperium split in the episode, and it definitely came to fruition because Gunther was called up only with Marcel Bartel, and Fabian Aichner was the one that kind of was like, I'm done with Imperium on NXT 2.0. So it seems like Fabian Aichner is staying on NXT 2.0, which is fine. I think he's a good fit anywhere he goes. He's just like a really good wrestler. And if they could find something new for him, that'd be great. I've heard some theories going around that since Fabian Aichner is Italian, he's probably going to get paired with Tony D'Angelo. And I feel really bad for Fabian Aichner if that happens. So that's just a rumor, though. But yeah, this was not something to make me happy. I was really not happy with this. But that's all right. We're going to talk about it more later about the entire problem with NXT 2.0. But for now, let's move on to Wednesday night Dynamite. It was Wednesday, so you know what that meant. There was some good stuff here, man. Actually, there was really good stuff. I mean, we have another, I don't know if I would call it match of the year contender, but it's definitely match of the week for me of last week, with the Young Bucks and FTR putting on another just classic tag team match, which felt very different from their original tag team match that they had. Their last one felt, it was going for a certain thing. It was almost like Edge and Randy Orton's The Greatest Match Ever, where it was a lot of callbacks. And, you know, and I think FTR and Young Bucks are very savvy, and they did that last time around. This one felt like a genuine Young Bucks-FTR match. The clash of styles that you want to see from these two. No one's trying to pull tricks out of the other one's bag. They're trying to one-up each other with their own stuff. It was very good stuff. If you haven't watched, that's like definitely the recommendation of the week, is the Young Bucks versus FTR on Dynamite. But yeah, watching this episode, I really realized AEW is so stacked with talent. It's insane. It might become a problem. It kind of already is, if you ask me, especially with the TNT division. I think that division is just like, it's not where it should be. And it was at a good place when Miro was champ. I really do think that. But with its champ now being Scorpio Sky, it's really wrapped up in a crap storyline. And there's no budging on it because Scorpio Sky has already declared he's not going to do open challenges. So what they need to do is to build more people to be challenging him, I guess, instead of Sammy. Like, they need to make Sammy earn his rematch, I guess, and really give some time to people that, I mean, I don't know, because now thinking about it, their division's pretty stacked, but everyone's kind of doing something. I will give them props. They always have people busy, and they're in multiple storylines at once, and that's definitely the benefit of having factions. It allows your roster to be so big, but everyone gets some shine still. But speaking of getting some shine, the women still need way more shine. There's a lot of great characters that we're missing out on because they only get one match a week. We do get talking segments, but it's not the best avenue, especially in AEW. Their stories are really told in that ring, and so you need to give them more than one match on Dynamite. But speaking of the women, some stuff that I'm excited about that we kind of got hinted, or well, not hinted, directly told, because Serena Deeb and Hikaru Shida are definitely continuing their feud as they enter the Owen Cup, which, man, this has been a really fun feud. Very technically done. Serena Deeb is an outstanding heel. If you haven't seen, she's been doing this beat the clock challenge, but it's for herself. She's like, I'm going to beat you in 5 minutes. And that's the whole game of her matches, which is a really fun take to do. It makes matches feel different, even though they're just squash matches. It still puts on some pressure. You know, someone could beat that 5 minutes. And then when someone does that, it'll be a moment, you know? But yeah, Hikaru Shida, outstanding wrestler. Her and Serena Deeb have great chemistry in the ring, and they're getting more and more intense. I definitely can see Hikaru Shida becoming like the next person in line for the AEW Women's Championship. And I don't just mean in a sense of like she'll challenge next. I mean she's going to win back that title because of the work she's putting in with Serena Deeb. She's going to get even more over than she is. And that's fantastic. But continuing on, Jamie Hayter and Toni Storm have also started up a feud for the Owen Cup. Just like a little face-off. And Jamie Hayter's like, I'm glad you're here, but I'm going to beat you up. And Toni Storm's like, no, you're not. So, and that's all I need, to be honest. The interview bit was pretty well done, as most are in AEW, because they usually keep them really short. And I love Tony Schiavone, like, just prefacing the interview, saying, I thank you guys for agreeing to no violence during this. And then, of course, it's like, okay, so what's going to happen here? It builds a nice bit of tension, and I always enjoy that. So, yeah, we have some two great women's, like, Owen Cup rivalries, which is the great thing about tournaments, is you can build stuff like this, and it can be long-lasting. Because, obviously, Jamie Hayter and Toni Storm, they're going to be feuding after this, as we saw with Serena Deeb and Hikaru Shida. So I think they're setting up some great pieces, and it's keeping things interesting because now I don't know who's going to win this tournament. I originally thought it was going to be Hikaru Shida, but now with Serena Deeb there and Toni Storm, and even Jamie Hayter has some, you know, contingency for that. So it's going to be fun. This tournament's going to be a lot of fun. I really just hope they give it more time. They let it dominate a couple Dynamites. But yeah. Following that, we're going to discuss big moment here. Samoa Joe makes his official AEW Dynamite debut. And he beats up Max Caster, which I'm so sad that that was his first opponent because I'm not a big fan of him. And he's fine, guys. He's fine. And we can go off on a little bit of a rant here why I don't like his character. I think Max Caster is fine. He's a decent wrestler. He puts on a good match, right? It's the rap that really does it for me, that I don't enjoy it. It immediately takes me out. And it's not the lyrics. It's not the beat. It's purely because of his body language. He is so awkward when he delivers a rap. It's not intentional either, because we are supposed to take his rap very seriously. We're supposed to treat him like he's a rapper. But his body language is so awkward and timid, and he's offbeat, first of all. And it just, like, infuriates me every time, because I'm like, dude, you do this every week. How have you not gotten better at doing this? And, you know, it's whatever. I mean, it's part of his character. So I just want it to be honed in and really focused. I hate to use John Cena as an example, because I don't think his gimmick really worked that well either. But I think Cena committed to the rapper portion of it better than Max Caster has. Doesn't necessarily mean they are better lyric for lyric or whatever. It's the mannerisms and the aura of that gimmick that I think John Cena is very much capturing better than Max Caster does. But that's just my opinion. Hopefully I don't get lit up on Twitter for that. But yeah, I mean, again, I like Max Caster. I think he's a fantastic heel. I've seen him live twice now, and every time he gets that crowd behind, or not behind him, but behind his opponent, because people really want to see him lose. So I think he has great potential. It's just, I really wish he would commit more to the bit, I guess. But anyways, Samoa Joe clearly wins. He has kind of a suntan going, or like a sunburn, so I was a little nervous for him the whole time. But anyways, he continues on this story with Jay Lethal and Sanjay Dutt, because after his match, Jay Lethal and Sanjay Dutt come out and berate him, and Lethal says that next week he's going to have a present waiting for Joe, which most people are taking to mean there's going to be a new member of Lethal and Sanjay Dutt's crew. I just don't quite know who it would be. Especially if it's threatening enough to be against Joe. Like, Joe should be scared of this person. I don't know, honestly. Because everyone's kind of wrapped up in things. I would have loved to have seen Powerhouse Hobbs in that, to be honest. Because Hobbs and Joe will be a fun match. But I love Hobbs and Team Taz. Don't get me wrong. I think they're a great fit. It's just, man, that'd be a fun match. So, yeah, we're going to see tomorrow, Wednesday. We're going to see what happens there. But yeah, and then following that, was going to talk about the Young Bucks and FTR, but again, just go watch it. It's fantastic. I don't know what's next for these teams, judging by this match. I'm not going to spoil. Should I spoil it? I mean, it's already been a week. I'm going to spoil this. FTR does win. Okay, FTR wins. If you haven't watched, I'm very sorry. But FTR does win, and I don't know where they go, because the tag titles are definitely wrapped up with this Redragon storyline. Now, Redragon could win the titles and become transitional champs for FTR, because FTR are definitely on like a tweener babyface run right now, which that match will be fantastic if it is. Otherwise, they have nowhere left to go. They are looking for a new manager, which I hope it's Bret Hart. So that could be their next step, is like, we need our manager and then we'll challenge for the titles. But man, they have to get those AEW tag titles. They just have to. They're collecting belts everywhere else. Why not at home? And I want to see it, man. FTR, man. This year for them has been phenomenal. Phenomenal. So, after that, we got a little bit of a setup for this week's Dynamite. We're going to have a Texas Death Match. It's going to be Hangman Page versus Adam Cole, baby. And, yeah, I really like this, like, face-to-face. Page was very aggressive, and I love that. He's finally coming out of his shell as a champion, because he's faced, you know, Danielson, Omega, Lance Archer, and then Adam Cole once already. So he's like, I have some momentum. I don't need to be worried about my challengers. It's coming off really genuine, of like someone who finally has confidence in themselves. But could he have too much confidence, because he is the one that scheduled this to be a Texas Death Match, which again he had with Lance Archer, and he won that match, and that match was brutal. But could this be like an overstep of like, you need to walk before you run, champ? I don't think so. I think that this match will, you know, be another stepping stone for Hangman. Maybe he'll get even more confident, and that could be the story going forward, is like, you know what, I'm confident that I can beat you in 60 minutes or whatever, and he does, or whatever. Him using his previous matches is what I'm trying to say. Him using his previous match experience to guide him with new challengers, and that could be a slippery slope, because these are new challengers. They're not the people you faced before. But I do think he's going to pull out a win here. I would really be surprised if Adam Cole picks up that AEW World title on Dynamite, and this early into Paige's championship run, which I've liked. I know a lot of people are like, Paige's story's boring, or it's not the A story. I don't agree with that. I don't necessarily disagree that it's not the A story, but I definitely don't agree with it being boring. I think that they've always been very subtle with Hangman Page, and everything he's been doing has been building and building and building. It's been very fun to watch. The matches always deliver. And that's all I'm going to ask for from somebody. I do think he does need a really juicy story, though. If he's going to end this title reign, he needs to have that era-defining story that, you know, makes his title reign very memorable. And I think he'll find it. There's so many challengers in AEW that I think he'll find it. I don't know who's after this, though. Punk has been really insinuating that he wants that next shot, and that'll be a really good match. But that's booking yourself in a corner, because people really love Punk. And you can't have Punk lose to Paige clean. I mean, you can. It's just not the move I would do. So we'll see on that. I could also see Punk challenging and MJF interfering, and that kind of continuing their story, wrapping Hangman Page into it, and might be the end of Page's title reign if that comes to fruition, because MJF, in my opinion, is the next AEW World Champion. Okay, so that was a lot to get through, guys. That was a lot for just the Dynamite, but it was a really good Dynamite. Definitely recommend it. I watched NXT UK kind of passively. I was at the gym, and I love NXT UK because it has Ilya Dragunov. And so I've been watching most of his defenses. I don't think I've missed one. I even went back and watched his defense against A-Kid. That was very good. But this past Thursday, Ilya took on Roderick Strong, and I mean, it's Ilya Dragunov and Roderick Strong. What can you expect? It was so good, guys. Great physical storytelling from two people who do it like at a masterclass. So, yeah, it was very good. And then I'm kind of picked up that Tyler Bate and Trent Seven may be splitting up because Trent Seven's been cheating a lot in matches. That dirty boy. So, yeah, hopefully, if they split, which I don't really want to see, although I would love a Tyler Bate Trent Seven match, if they split, they don't go to 2.0, because then they're going to get new names and they're going to be a fish out of water. So I'd rather them just split and then go to main roster, or split and stay there, and then we get some cool heel Tyler Trent Seven stuff. That'd be really fun. And it'd be a great, now that I think about it out loud, a heel Trent Seven versus Ilya Dragunov would be a really good match. Because I feel like Trent commits to his personas, and him being a heel could be like next level. But following that, like I said, I don't normally cover NXT UK, but there was a big thing going on, and I love the two competitors in it, so I wanted to give y'all a bit of an update. Let me know if you guys like want me to cover NXT UK more. I'd be happy to do it. It's only an hour, and I can, you know, kind of talk about it in depth, because I have been watching since its existence, and I love the stuff that they're doing over there. But following that, we can talk about SmackDown, the SmackDown after Mania, which was basically the Raw after Mania. And yeah, we had some big stuff going on. Happy Corbin and Madcap Moss have officially split up. And Madcap Moss was very over with that crowd, guys. I don't know. I've always liked Riddick Moss. I didn't like the Happy Corbin, Madcap Moss thing. Kind of hoping this feud returns Baron Corbin into either broke-ass Corbin or Baron Corbin. I'll even take that over Happy Corbin, because I never thought this gimmick was really any good. Although, I did like the initial story of him going from broke, from rags to riches in Las Vegas, you know, by simply gambling. But that was more so because I went to Vegas around the same time, and so I was like, oh, that's funny, he's doing what I'm doing. But yeah. And then, like I said earlier, Marcel Bartel and Gunther. Marcel is now renamed as well, but we'll get to that in a second. So it's Gunther, Marcel Bartel, and Raquel Gonzalez all got called up on that episode of SmackDown, which is pretty freaking huge. And out of all of those three names, I'm pretty sure Raquel Gonzalez is going to be the first person to win a title, because that's just the way things go. Their new names are Gunther Ludwig and Raquel Rodriguez, which Raquel Rodriguez, pretty decent name. I'm not mad about it. I guess Raquel Gonzalez is her shoot name. I don't know. I didn't look that up, but that's what I'm assuming. That's why they changed it. I'm really sad that Gunther had a debut on the main roster as Gunther and not Walter. But I'm not mad about the Marcel Bartel one, because Ludwig is the name of one of my friend's dogs. And so I always loved the name Ludwig. So, yeah, I mean, whatever. I can't expect anything good from that. But Walter did debut in some red trunks that looks so menacing. Like, so menacing. I loved it. I wish he would have pulled those trunks out for another thing, but man, did he look cool in those trunks. It felt like, I think it's The Force Awakens. Sorry for the Star Wars reference, but those red stormtrooper looking guys. Man, I'm gonna get destroyed for not knowing those things, but you get the point. It looks scary. And then we kind of got the big news. Roman's big news. Roman tells the Usos that, you know, I see me have two titles. Why don't you guys have two titles? So he wants them to unify the Raw and SmackDown tag titles, which admittedly is very exciting. I like it. I am a proponent for unified titles. I like that there's one person on top. In this case, two people, and they're brothers. So yeah, I'm all for that. I don't think they're going to get him, though, because RK-Bro are the most overact in the entire company, and I truly mean that. Unless they break up, which I don't know if that's going to happen anytime soon, Usos are not getting those titles, and they might lose their titles, which would be a nice wrinkle in this Bloodline feud or storyline that's kind of gotten a little stale. At least the internal conflict portion of it has gotten a little stale. I need to see them fight more. The best parts of the Bloodline story have been when they weren't on the same page. And I think that's just because Roman is such a good emotional manipulator of his cousin. So I want to see that side of him again. I want to see gaslight, gatekeep, girl boss Roman. But another wrinkle in his story, Shinsuke Nakamura comes out to the ring, and before he can say anything, Roman says, "I know what you're going to say. You know, you're sad that you lost your friend. What was his name? Rick." And then the whole crowd goes, "Boogs," which was a great moment. And so Roman arches out those humongous arms and wraps them around Shinsuke and gives him a nice fat hug that looks so comforting and warm. Then he steps back, and the Usos immediately double super kick Shinsuke. So it's definitely the match for Backlash, and I am happy about that. I love Shinsuke Nakamura. I thought he was kind of being wasted in that tag team with Rick Boogs. As much as I found it entertaining, I want Shinsuke Nakamura to be the king of strong style, and I want him to whoop people, kick them in the face. I want knees straight to the face. And I think him and Roman are going to make a really fun combination. It's such a clash of styles because Roman's such a powerhouse, and Shinsuke being that striker, he's going to have to like really work him down. And yeah, I mean, Roman's actual defenses have been really well done, with the exception of the demon. But like the actual in-ring storytelling aspect has been really well done. And so I think Nakamura can follow suit. He's going to lose. He's going to get smashed and pinned, but at least he won't be stacked. But same night, AEW Rampage happened. And man, we got a star-making performance from Wheeler Yuta. His match with Danielson was already really good, and this was even better. Wheeler Yuta took on John Moxley in a match frantic, hectic, physical, scary at times, and gruesome at times, gory to say the least. Definitely go out of your way to watch this one. And eventually Wheeler Yuta just earns the respect of John Moxley. I mean, Wheeler Yuta is bleeding buckets. It was a little scary. I'm not the biggest fan of gore, and this felt gory. Like, this felt like when Eddie accidentally bladed an artery and he was just like gonna pass out at any minute. Like, this felt like that. And just saw a crimson mask on Yuta as he bows out in defeat. He gets choked out. He takes two paradigm shifts and kicks out of both of them. And finally, Mox is like, "You know what? I'm just gonna have to choke this fool out." And so he does. Wheeler Yuta goes to sleep. He wakes up. He's like, "Whoa." And then Papa Regal is in the ring, looking like Regal looked like he was gonna give a Regal knee. Like, he was loading that thing up. He looked like Shinsuke in the corner. He was just shaking his leg. And so I was a little bit like, "Whoa, is he gonna not let him in?" But no. False alarm. Yuta gets the respect of William Regal. They shake hands. He's bloody. He's so bloody by this point. I felt bad for Regal because I know his hands are gonna be sticky. And so it looks like the Blackpool Combat Club, terrible name, finally have their first official recruit in Wheeler Yuta. This is very exciting stuff, but I don't know where they go next with this. This is another situation where it's like, okay, you have Wheeler Yuta, you have Danielson, and you have Mox. Who's going to go for what? Yuta has the ROH Pure Championship. So there's one thing he's doing. Mox and Danielson, on the other hand, what are they going to be, a tag team? Because they've tagged a lot recently and it's been really fun. But that tag division's really stacked with talent. And I don't know. They don't have enough people yet to go against the Chris Jericho Appreciation Society, which is where I'm predicting that's where this leads. Is to them, but they still need more members first, because as of now it's like 5-on-3, which I know you got Danielson and Mox that could take up room, but like that could even out the playing field. But I mean, I don't know. I really don't know where they're going to go next with this. I would love to see Moxley go after that world title, but again, that picture is pretty stacked right now. And the TNT title just feels below them at this point. So you're running into some issues. But it's very fun for now. And then let's talk about last night. We had Monday Night Raw, which was basically their actual Raw after Mania, because we got a call-up. Tommaso Ciampa has been called up to Raw, and he's keeping his name, guys. He's keeping his name. He didn't, let's be honest, it was an underwhelming intro to Tommaso Ciampa, someone who has had such a dramatic, like, existence in NXT. I mean, let's think back. Remember when he was so hated and booed that he didn't need entrance music? He would just come out and people would just boo him. And that was his song. He was just that captivating. And this was not that. They didn't keep any of the mystique of Tommaso Ciampa, which honestly, and we're going to talk about this later, he kind of lost in NXT 2.0 anyway. But yeah, it was just like, here's this guy, and here's Ezekiel, and Kevin Owens interrupts the segment. And it might set up KO versus Ciampa, but I kind of feel like that set up more KO versus Ezekiel. But we'll see. I'm glad he got to keep his name, because I did not want to see what they were going to try and name this man. Someone who didn't keep his name, but seemingly on his own accord, is Austin Theory. He announced that he's dropping Austin from his name. Just going to be called Theory. He said at the behest of Mr. McMahon, you know. Which, honestly, not the worst. I don't know. It's not the worst. Theory, it's not the worst name. But he's also going to be challenging Finn Balor for the U.S. Championship, which I kind of think he's going to win, because they haven't done anything with Finn Balor. And he lost to Andre Battle Royal to Madcap Moss. So I definitely could see Theory picking that up. In other news, Veer came again, and he came way too hard on Dominic Mysterio. Dominic was stretchered out after a $1 million arm, which is a great name for a lariat, and this, I forget what it's called, but it's just like a front face lock, essentially. And there's a great gif of Veer shaking the front face lock on him, Dominic screaming as if he's being murdered. It's so good. This match was originally supposed to be Rey Mysterio versus Veer, but Rey Mysterio had a medical issue and was unable to partake in this match. So hoping for whatever that is to be, you know, minor and have a speedy recovery, because I love Rey Mysterio. But Dominic getting stretchered off was not the best sign, because I'm like, okay, are they keeping both of them off TV for a minute while Rey heals? And I kind of think that's the case. And if that is the case, I hope this doesn't affect Veer being on TV, Veer coming on television, because I love to see Veer come everywhere. Come every week. And so, yeah, hopefully this doesn't affect Veer. Hopefully he gets, you know, someone else to come on next week. But yeah. Next up, we have a very interesting storyline. I think people are going to hate on this, and I'm fine with hating on it a little bit. But essentially, AJ Styles and Damian Priest, they have a match tonight. Before the match, they actually get in a brawl before Raw, they said. Ooh, that was tough to say. They get into a bit of an altercation before the cameras are rolling, and it's like caught and it's played back, and I like it. It feels very organic. The actual like Raw itself is fun. They're in the backstage area, they're on containers, they're fighting, whatever. It's very fun, and it's like very Pitbull of AJ Styles, you know, to be an on-site type of guy. To just see Damian and be like, I ain't wasting no time. I'm whooping you right here in this little bit of parking lot or wherever we're at. That was a very cool bit. And then we actually get the match, and it was going really well. It was a really fun match to begin off. And then we get the part that I think everyone's going to hate, which, you know, I didn't love. But essentially, Damian Priest, like, gets a moment where AJ's on the outside, and Damian just sits in the middle of the ring. Purple light flashes down and he disappears, and the match is called off. Why? Don't know. I'm guessing I'm okay with this for now. I usually let them have a week or two until I'm like, okay, this part of his character sucks. Because if he does this again, then it sucks. But doing it once, I think it's fine. You know what the part I really don't like about it, though, is the actual portion where he disappears is when he's winning the match. Like, you disappear when you're losing the match. And that would have been fine. I think that would have been a better way to do that. Because now it's like, well, why didn't you just finish this guy? I don't know. It's a little weird. Or do it at the beginning. Like, tease, you know, the match, which, I don't know, maybe that's a worse idea. But essentially, do your entrance, get into the ring. As soon as the ref rings the bell, you disappear. And to me, that seems like a good idea because AJ's like, I want to get my hands on Damian Priest no matter what. This deprives AJ of getting his hands on you. And so it infuriates him, and you, in a way, you win, you know, at least in the mental game. But who knows? Maybe that's a stupid idea, but that's what I would have done. So yeah, he disappeared. He has powers of spookiness, which is fine for now. For now. Like I said, keeping an open mind for now. Following that, we also have Cody Rhodes in his first Raw match. I have in 6 years, but it might be in 7 years. I don't remember too great. But Cody Rhodes has first Raw match, and who could it be against? Of course, The Miz. So he faces The Miz. Rollins immediately comes out and is going to watch this from ringside and do commentary at the same time because he's so talented. And then after the match is over, after Cody wins with a Cody Cutter and a Crossroads, Rollins gets into the ring, fakes. He's like, oh, I'm going to attack you. But he doesn't. His trick is lie. He's going to talk to him. And he's like, man, I'm just going to challenge you. So he does. And Cody accepts it. And so we have a rematch for WrestleMania Backlash. Rhodes versus Rollins 2, which is how they're building it, which I like. I like that they're building this like a fight, you know? It's something that they did with Karrion Kross and Finn Balor in NXT that I really enjoyed. Was like, it felt like Rocky and Apollo, you know? So, very good stuff. And I think that match is going to deliver. I just don't know where they're going to go from there, but I'm open to wherever these roads lead. These Cody roads. So, following that though, we have MVP Omos and Lashley getting into a verbal altercation, which was very fun. This was a very fun segment. Lashley like interrupts the MVP or the VIP lounge. Like, there's couches in the ring and stuff, and MVP's gonna come out and host it. But Bobby comes out first, and he's like, I know I'm not gonna be invited over here, so I'm just gonna, you know, he's basically going to protest. He's going to sit in on the VIP lounge, which is what I should do every time I don't get into a lounge at any club. I should just sit in anyway and just not move. But anyways, MVP comes out to the stage. He has Omos in a nice looking suit. So already upgrading him from that stupid Drake looking jacket. And so they just start shouting at each other. Lashley's like, listen, man, you say that you came here for me, but we all know this was your farewell tour. MVP is like, you wouldn't have gotten anywhere you went without me. And I don't know why I'm getting so upset with myself right now, because that's the past. And I'm looking at the future as he looks up to this behemoth of Omos. Already Omos feels like a third wheel. So he definitely needs to get himself more involved in this. Would love for Omos to have like snuck up behind Bobby Lashley. I don't know how easy that is for a man his size, but to have MVP come out on the stage first and distract Lashley, and then Omos come from behind and maybe like throw a couch at him, that would have been cool. Or, you know, pick up Lashley and just give him one of those choke slams onto the couch, which admittedly wouldn't do that much damage unless they gimmick the couch. All right, now I'm just getting in my head. But unless they gimmick the couch and the couch splits in half, you know, when he chokeslam him, it's like, oh, this guy's strong. That would have been really fun. But now it was kind of ended on that. No, so yeah, that's my notes on it. It was a good segment. I don't want to take away from it at all, but it was definitely carried by MVP and Lashley's back and forth. And I just don't want Omos to get the third wheel treatment. So there should be some ways for Omos to get his comeuppance, in a sense, to have his voice heard even without him talking, and his voice being his big, ginormous hands wrapping around someone's throat. But following that, though, Bianca has a match with Queen Zelina, pretty decent match. Bianca wins. Sonya Deville comes out and she's like, Bianca, you are so good at wrestling and we need to find you an opponent for WrestleMania Backlash. And guess what? I already did. Look behind you. Look at the screen. Look at that big screen and see your next opponent. So Bianca, foolishly, you know, post-match, she has so much adrenaline. She's not really listening to Sonya. So she's just like, oh, look over there. Okay. Looks over there. Sonya chop blocks her in the back of the knee. It's Sonya the whole time. Sonya Deville's the next challenger. She picks up the contract that she brought out, signs that thing, and then just leaves it on the floor. And then boom, that's going to be WrestleMania Backlash match. And I'm very excited for that because I think Sonya Deville is money. I think the way she talks, the way she carries herself, and the way she wrestles is so diametrically opposed to Bianca Belair. And I think this is going to be a really good match. And it's going to be a really fun story if they do this right. But Raw ends up closing with RK-Bro and the Usos holding their titles over each other. The Usos have a match with the Street Profits also, which was a really fun match. Definitely a fun match. But yeah, they come out and interrupt another match. American Alpha versus RK-Bro, I think. They interrupt, whatever, to get in each other's face. They end the show by holding the titles over each other's head. And the unification challenge has been accepted. RK-Bro and the Usos will be facing off for the unified tag team titles. Which, again, I've already mentioned, I want the Usos to... I think they should lose this to create more conflict between themselves and the Bloodline. And, yeah. And I think RK-Bro, you know, man, that's a real legit tag team at this point. And they're probably the best tag team in the company just because they don't really focus that well on tag teams. I mean, you have some great tag teams, but not in the kayfabe sense of WWE. So, yeah, that was everything that happened this last week, okay? And now we're going to transition to the actual topic of today's podcast episode. And that's right, we're going to be talking about the winners and losers of NXT 2.0. And so let me just preface this by saying there's no winning and losing in life, okay? You live and you live. But there are things that happen to you that determine your character going forward, okay? And NXT 2.0 is that thing that could happen to you that determines your future, or at least can hinder your present. And I think NXT 2.0, the shift from NXT to NXT 2.0, let's start there. NXT, a very in-ring focused storytelling approach. Towards the later end, of course, they kind of got dramatic with the Indy Hartwell and Dexter Lumis wedding. But for the most part, they kept their stories like New Japan does. Very much of an exhibition style, of a performer style of like, I'm the best, I'm the champ. I'm the best, I'm the challenger, that type of approach. I challenge you. So you get those kind of characters, which admittedly is limited, but it does lead to more of a focus on in-ring ability, and they give more time to matches. The other end of the spectrum is NXT 2.0, where everyone is a gimmick. It's very WWF 1995. You are a gimmick. You are Italian. You are a casino player. You're a Steiner. So everything comes down to the storytelling because of this person's character, not because of what this person can do. So that's the biggest difference between the two. Now, the presentation is also very different. The color palette, the mood, the ambiance that each of these promotions are trying to give is diametrically opposed. I mean, NXT 1.0, very dark, very moody, almost giving grunge, while NXT 2.0 is very light and the paint splatter. It's trying to invite people in. I also think it's trying to be cool in a younger sense, but it's failing, while NXT 2.0 was trying to be cool in a vintage sense, which admittedly towards the end it kind of got a little too punk rock sense with the big eagle and the skulls. I thought kind of got a little cheesy. But that being said, those are the big differences. And those approaches to storytelling and pro wrestling have people fit in better in one or the other, it seemed. Especially in this one. We're going to get to some in-betweeners, but this seismic shift definitely left some people to the wayside. So let's talk about the losers transitioning from NXT to NXT 2.0. These are the people that have been wronged by NXT 2.0. Either they haven't had the greatest focus, or they've been shoehorned into gimmicks that don't fit them, or they just are completely out of their depth because there is nothing for them to do here. We're going to start off with one that I think is such an unfortunate. I mean, everyone in here is unfortunate because I like all these people. But Kushida. Kushida is arguably one of the best juniors in the whole world. And he's been relegated to just being, you know, a joke tag team at that. And I'm not saying NXT was doing him any favors, but he was definitely a legitimate contender for the NXT North American Championship. And once, you know, the Cruiserweight division was dissolved, it kind of seemed like he needed something else to do, and they shoehorned him in this. Another great example is Peter Dunne. Pete Dunne was definitely in line for the NXT Championship. I predicted that he was going to take it off Finn Balor, but that didn't end up happening. But yeah, even with Karrion Kross there, I thought he could be the next guy to take it off him. And then when Samoa Joe came back, I was like, okay, maybe Pete Dunne then? No, still no Pete Dunne. Someone that was really just left to the wayside because he didn't fit this new style. He very much was NXT 1.0. He was very moody and grunge, and his entire storytelling was told in the ring. So it's very unfortunate. Saray, she was a new signee. She had a lot of potential in NXT 1.0. Definitely could have saw her challenge for the NXT Women's Championship. And now, I don't see that happening anytime soon. Kaylee Ray, another person that falls in pretty much the exact same camp. And I especially feel bad for her because she was in NXT UK, already been an NXT UK Women's Champion. Kind of was like, okay, I'm going to tackle NXT now. And once she got here, everything changed. And her style of storytelling and wrestling wasn't the norm anymore. And now she's going to have to basically start at ground zero. And Grizzled Young Veterans, another exact same boat as Kaylee Ray. They'd done everything they could do in NXT UK. And now coming over, they needed even more of a gimmick. And now they're like thieves. It's so weird. But the biggest loser from NXT 2.0 is definitely Walter. I mean, they have killed the mystique that Walter had. Walter coming into NXT was a dream scenario for NXT fans. And now it was a nightmare scenario once you realized he was going to go to NXT 2.0. And now him being on the main roster is even dampened by his NXT 2.0 run because now he's Gunther. And I'm sorry, but it objectively, a name matters, and Gunther is not nearly the name that Walter is. And just the persona that Walter had in NXT UK, he was an immediate threat to anyone, including their champions. And I feel like him coming from NXT UK straight to the main roster would have been such a better move. But who knows, because, I mean, he did get jobbed out at Survivor Series, so I'm not going to forget about that. So it just seems like they never knew what they wanted to do him. But NXT 2.0 was a glaring, glaring flaw in his career so far. They ruined what made Walter so scary and so menacing. And it's unfortunate. He's, if not my favorite, he is definitely in my top five favorite pro wrestlers, possibly of all time. I'm going to start out with those just... Start off with the bad news. We unloaded there, right? Let's get to some in-betweeners. Some people that probably would have been fine in NXT 1.0, and they might be okay here. Starting off with Cameron Grimes. I almost put him in the loser category just because I do feel like they stripped away his character in NXT, in this transition. And I felt like they were really on to something with the Cameron Grimes LA Knight Million Dollar Title Tournament. Or not tournament, but rivalry. I thought they really had some great chemistry. and they were able to figure out ways to make Grimes like a championship contender, you know, using this title. But coming off of that, he definitely seems like a neutered version of Cameron Grimes. He's not so peppy. He's almost become a very boring character. And that's something you couldn't say about him before. But admittedly, he is the NXT UK, not UK, NXT North American champion. So he's doing all right. Another in-betweener, Santos Escobar. I think he was doing all right in NXT, and he might be getting a better shine in NXT 2.0 just because there's less great workers there, and so he's used to put other people over. But I do think that his initial run as Cruiserweight Champion was kind of his height, and it might not be replicated again until he goes to main roster, and hopefully he gets to keep his faction, because that faction's money. Like, that's money. Another in-betweener, Tommaso Ciampa. Tommaso Ciampa is kind of a difficult one just because he was NXT champion at the start of NXT 2.0, but it was very obvious that he was the guy that Joe was supposed to be. You know, he's the veteran talent that these NXT rookies have to overcome. So, he's very in-between. He's middle of the road. He lost some mystique, but he was also kind of overstaying his welcome in NXT 1.0 as well. So, and then Imperium kind of falls in the same boat as Volter, although I do think Imperium are better set to have handled NXT 2.0 because they desperately needed tag teams, and they're just like great veteran talent, and their character really revolved around Walter. So it just kind of was a trickle effect. I don't think they were necessarily hurt too badly though. This next one, pretty interesting one. It's Joe Gacy. If Joe Gacy had been in NXT 1.0, I don't know how he would have fared. I do think that his stories would have been more concise, let's say that. I think that NXT 1.0 knew how to do the traditional, maybe not even traditional, but they knew how to do soap opera-esque storylines in a more grounded version. Kind of like, in my best example, would be the Aleister Black and Johnny Gargano whodunit. I think the way they executed that was very well done and a very fun, light, and a wink and a nod, you know? It wasn't too outlandish. And I feel like Joe Gacy's character in NXT 2.0 is allowed to be outlandish, and that's kind of the issue with it. But I think he will succeed in NXT 2.0 just because of the landscape in that main event division. They need people like him. But again, it's kind of, he's not a winner. He isn't being helped by this new form of storytelling. I would say he's almost being hindered by the lack of limitations. But not too much that he's, you know, a Tony D'Angelo, you know. But anyways. And then my number one in-betweener is Solo Sikoa. Sorry, guys. This is a tough name. But in NXT 1.0, I do think that his name would have been Solo Uso. Or at the least, he would have just been called Solo. And I think his storyline would have much more connected himself with the Bloodline. But he is still pretty connected with the Bloodline in NXT 2.0. It's just, he does feel like a fish out of water. He feels like an NXT 1.0 guy. He could have fit in there. Because he has such an edge to him. And he's very much has a chip on his shoulder that you don't see with the NXT 2.0 people. They don't have these realistic problems or these realistic outlooks. And I feel like Solo has that. He wants to prove himself so that when he comes up to the Bloodline, he's like, I'm ready for whatever comes at me. You know, if you guys don't want me in it, then whatever. If you do want me in it, then, you know, I'm going to dominate. I definitely can see him being an NXT 2.0 champion. It's just a little too early to tell. He had a pretty decent showing with Walter, by the way, which... thinking about that, that could have been a star-making performance for Solo if it was Walter and not Gunther. And if it was built more, you know, it could have been his Tommy Dreamer Sandman moment, when Sandman's, you know, caning Tommy Dreamer and it really gets him over with the fans. You could have had Volter chop Solo Sikoa to a pulp and really get him over, you know, as this, he's here, like he is legit, you know. But that's a fantasy book. But yeah, I think Solo is going to be an interesting one to watch in NXT 2.0. If he stays long enough to become a champ, he's going to be possibly their best champion. But let's move on to some winners. Some people that have been benefiting from this transition. I think that, I just think that they've been benefiting. I don't know where I was going to go with that. But Mandy Rose and Toxic Attraction have definitely benefited from NXT becoming NXT 2.0. This wouldn't have worked in NXT 1.0 because of their grounded storytelling and their focus on, you know, competition. This title reign is not focused on competition. It's focused on getting, it's a chicken shit heel, essentially. And you didn't get that much in NXT 1.0. And I think it works, you know, and I think this is a character that she could use on the main roster. Do I necessarily want to see her become a main roster women's champion? Not really, but you could, and it's believable. And I think that's the one thing that they've done with the winners in NXT 2.0 is they've made them believable to be on the main roster. And that's what I think they kind of did wrong with their losers, is they have ruined their legitimacy. But anyways, next person, LA Knight. This is kind of, he almost went into in-betweener, but I think I elevated him to winners because I can definitely see him becoming an NXT 2.0 champion, because he is over, man. This NXT 2.0 crowd loves him. And you can argue that that would have happened either way, but I don't really think so. I don't think LA Knight would have gotten that same amount of shine in NXT 1.0 as he does here, because as much as I think LA Knight's a decent, good wrestler, he's very much a wrestler that fits the main roster mold. And so that main roster mold was not the norm in NXT 1.0. But yeah, I definitely see him capitalizing off of this, and he's definitely increased his stock. So when he does show up on main roster, he's going to have a little more sway. Same with Grayson Waller. I think this is the exact same point, only I think he's actually helped himself even more. Like I said earlier, I definitely see him being the guy to beat Braun Breaker for this NXT championship and actually beat him. No one, you know, not him coming back and winning it again. I think Grayson's that guy. The way they've positioned him, he's had feuds with AJ Styles, and it's just been like, this guy's the next guy. Like, he's the next Miz. So I wouldn't be surprised there. But next winner is my personal favorite, and I'm really glad to see this person, these people actually, get the shine that they've been getting. It's the A-Champ. It's Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams. I think they're a fantastic combination, and they're ready for main roster any day. I would love for Carmelo Hayes to be the next guy with that NXT championship. I think that would really elevate the title to a height it hasn't been since maybe Finn Balor. Because honestly, Braun Breaker's reign hasn't been great, as we just saw him lose a bunch. But anyways, yeah, Carmelo Hayes has definitely been able to benefit. But I also feel like Carmelo Hayes would have succeeded in NXT 1.0 as well. I think his in-ring style very much matched the norm, and his character, well, actually, you know what? That's the other thing, though. In NXT 2.0, he's definitely had more character development, and maybe that wouldn't have been the case in NXT 1.0 because of their in-ring focus. So, yeah, either way, Carmelo Hayes has been doing fantastic work on NXT 2.0. If you see a match with Carmelo Hayes in it, that's one of those you might want to tune in for. That's if you don't watch on a regular basis like I don't, Carmelo Hayes is a draw for me. And finally, the biggest winner, I think we can all guess who the biggest winner from NXT 2.0 is. It's Braun Breaker, the guy who beat LA Knight on his first night in the first match and then got himself into a title program pretty much immediately. I mean, this kid has been able to rise, and we've been watching him really develop as a wrestler, and I'm not in that boat of like, this guy's the future WrestleMania main eventer. I don't see that for Braun Breaker, but I definitely see him on the main roster mixing up with people. It's just, he's not, I don't know. I think his character still needs a little bit of work, but let's just be honest, he has definitely benefited the most from NXT 2.0. He is the guy they've built this entire brand around. And whether or not that's really deserving is another question, but that's the meat of this whole argument, of this whole thing. It's the thing that got me thinking about this. So yeah, those are my thoughts on NXT 2.0. Let me know what you guys think. I hope this wasn't too mean. I might listen to this back and like not keep any of this. So if you're hearing this, I think I wasn't that mean. But anyways, that's it for tonight. For tonight. And yeah, please leave this podcast review wherever you can, you know, review it. Spotify has added reviewing. Share this podcast. Keep up with us here at Hold for Hold at the Twitter and Instagram at Hold for Hold. And I'm really excited for Friday. We're going to have a new YouTube video go up. I haven't quite decided which topic I'm going to go with because I kind of have a lot in the chamber. So we'll see. It'll be a surprise for us. But yeah, anyways, you guys, thank you guys for sticking around. I hope you guys have a great day whenever you're listening to this. And please stay safe and have a good one. Bye, you guys.